The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. Habit 6, Synergize.
You see, these two habits, 4 and 5, let's see if we can remember them now. 4 basically is the attitude of thinking win-win, that is, mutual benefit in all our relationships. Then 5 is the skill that enables the interaction, the human interaction, to be based on a correct understanding of both parties. 6, as I mentioned, synergy, is the fruit of 4 and 5 working together. So in a sense, you don't go for synergy. You work on 4 and 5, and synergy results. Now remember how we defined synergy. The whole is greater than the sum of its parts. Meaning the relationship between the parts themselves is a part. Therefore, 1 plus 1 equals 3 or more. See, the whole is greater than. Two minds here interacting together produces a third mind more creative than either of these two minds. Put two plants together, and their root structure will affect the soil underneath that will enable both plants to grow better. Put two pieces of wood together, and it will hold much more weight than two pieces of wood hold separately added together. It's a very common phenomenon throughout all of nature, all of life. And it produces marvelous things. And I think the reason why is that both parties are influenced in the process. They literally change in the process. They don't come into the process closed-minded. They come in open-minded. I'm sure you've all heard about the Atomic Energy Commission that was established after World War II to help direct the use of atomic energy and the development of atomic energy. The chairman appointed was David Lilienthal, and he did something very interesting to create synergy. And it really is an amazing result, because he brought a group of people together that were very highly connected, highly influential types. Some people could almost say prima donnas, celebrities in their own right, as it were, with their own discipleship and their own kinds of frames of reference. And he brought them together, and they had a very, very heavy agenda, and the press was pressing them up against that agenda. The national agenda was pressing it upon them, see? And he took several weeks to create an emotional bank account and a kind of human interaction that created a bonding between these people, and synergy resulted. But he was very criticized for doing this. They all wanted to impatiently get right at the agenda itself. But he had them just get to know each other and get to know each other's interests and hopes and goals, concerns, backgrounds, frames of reference, paradigms. You see what I mean? As they got to know each other, when you really genuinely listen to people, a sense of reverence is cultivated inside you. Gradually. In fact, I might just parenthetically say this. Every time I've done that with students in the classroom, where I ask them to have a paper early in the semester that tells a little about themselves and about their real motivations for education and so forth, where they really reveal themselves, I always feel humbled by the experience. I feel reverent toward them as individuals. If I don't do it, and in some large classes where I use teaching assistants, and I have them do it, I really find I have missed something. I have missed the sense of what's happening inside the hearts of precious individuals. And I kind of can look at them as numbers, you know, faces and so forth. But you don't get inside. Well, Lilienthal followed this process. It's a kind of a good idea for all of us. If we ever get into situations where we're trying to create something new, is to get people to know each other and from where they're coming. Little by little, a norm developed among this group that perhaps could be expressed in this language. What is one person's opinion is everybody's opinion. Therefore, if you would say, Stephen, I disagree with that point. Since you are a worthwhile and intelligent person, I've come to know you as such, see? If you disagree with me, then I disagree with me. Because there's something I don't understand. Because you're a very intelligent, worthwhile person. You represent a frame of reference, a background, see, that's different than mine. Therefore, I have to look at my own situation. You might even say, I disagree with you. If you disagree, I disagree. Because there's something I don't yet understand, see? The spirit of respect and reverence is the essence of this synergistic product. In fact, it might be better put, the spirit of respecting the differences, even valuing the differences, is the essence of synergy. Where you look on the difference between you and your spouse, between you and your children, between you and your fellow executives on the executive team as being a strength, not as being a weakness. You see, insecure people who have high needs to clone other people and to kind of mold them over in their own thinking and their own image, they want to kind of pressure people into thinking like they think, unaware that the very strength in having another point of view come to them is the strength of the relationship. That's what produces the synergy. Both parties, both individuals have changed paradigms from the experience. I remember an experience I had fairly recently down in Orlando, Florida, where I was talking on a subject called manage from the left and lead from the right, implying that management is more of a left brain activity because it deals with logic and analysis and sequential planning and a lot of verbalization and so forth, where leadership deals with direction, team building, reading people, empathizing with them, motivating them, more of a right brain function. See, that was the nature of the presentation. The president of the company was really intrigued by it, and he came up to me during the morning break and said, you know, Stephen, I am most interested in that subject, but I've been thinking more about my marriage than the business. I wonder if you'd have lunch with my wife and I and just kind of watch how we talk to each other, because we have real communication difficulties. And I said, that's fine, let's do it. We sat down together at lunch. After we exchanged some pleasantries and so forth, he basically said, now, honey, I've invited Stephen if he could have lunch with us for a few minutes and just kind of help us in our communication. I know I should try to be a more patient, a more sensitive, considerate husband. Could you give me something specific you want me to work on? Now, what's that? Left or right? Left, see? The left brain wants parts. The right brain deals with holes. Could you give me something specific you want me to work on? She said, well, as I've told you before, it's nothing really specific. It's more of a general sense I have about priorities. What's that? See, a sensing, a holistic, a gestalt. He said, well, I hear you keep saying that, but it's hard for me to get a handle on that. Really, I mean, what do you want me to do? What do you mean by this general sense about priorities? She said, I just don't think that the marriage is as important as you tell me it is. Well, what more could I do to make it more important? Tell me specifically. She said, it's hard to put into words. You know, at that, he just kind of nonplussed. He just looked at me and said, you see what I mean? See what I'm dealing with? I mean, could you deal with this much dumbness in your marriage? Really, and he looked at her with a kind of utter disdain, disgust, you know. Oh, gosh, if you can't put it into words, it doesn't exist, you know. And she could read that attitude and said, it's a feeling, it's a strong feeling. Honey, if you don't mind, that's your problem. And really condescendingly. In fact, it's also your mother's problem. And if you don't mind, it's the problem of every woman I know. You know, just huge withdrawals some more. And then he began to interrogate her like it was some kind of a deposition. Honey, do you live where you want to live? That's not it. It's not it at all. I know, but since you won't tell me exactly what it is, I figure the best way to find out what it is to find out what it is not. Do you live where you want to live? I guess. Honey, Stephen's here for just a few minutes. He's trying to help us. Can't you give just quick yes and no answers? Yeah, I guess. It's just yes or no. Yes. Okay. You live where you want to live. We've established that. Okay. Do you do the things you want to do? I guess. Yes or no, honey? Yes or no? Then after that, do you have the things you want to have? Yes or no? You know, I wasn't helping at all, so I decided to intervene, and I basically said, is that kind of how it goes? He said, every day, Stephen. Looks at his wife, she says, the story of our marriage. I classify that little story as two half-brained people living together. How many can relate? How many don't want to raise your hand? I said, do you two have any kids? Yeah? Really? How many? Two? Really? How'd you do it? He said, well, what do you mean? I mean, look, that's called synergy. One plus one usually equals two. Now you have one plus one equals four. Amazing. That's called synergy. The whole is greater than the sum of the parts. How'd you do it? He said, you know how we did it. I said, you must have valued the differences. What about the emotional differences? What about the psychological differences? See, synergy within ourselves, is where we respect both sides of our nature, the analytical side and the creative side. If the analytical side continually overpowers the creative, intuitive side, there's no internal unity. If the emotional, more intuitive side completely overpowers the verbal and the analytical side, there'll be little opportunity to really communicate effectively with life. Synergy within ourselves comes when there's an internal unity, not just between our right and left side, but between our values and our habits, where there's integrity. So synergy has as its base, as its underpinning, the intrapersonal relation between me and me. Then interpersonal, where I respect the fact that you see it differently. You think differently. That is the strength. So try to train yourself in this attitude. Next time someone says to you, I disagree with you, say, good. You see it differently. Now you're open. Plus, I'm totally disarmed. You know, how can I fight you? You've just taken the sword right out of my hand. I can't handle that at all. You affirmed me. You didn't agree with me. You said, good, you see it differently. I'd like to understand. Someone says, I don't understand. Say, great, probably there's things I don't understand. Let me listen to how you see it, how you feel, see? You watch what happens. Think you could train yourself to do that? On jugular issues? Where you have heavy ego investment? That's the truest test, isn't it? On the safe peripheral issues of life, this isn't too difficult. But if you deal with key issues, particularly where your own self-esteem is at stake or your self-doubt, that's where it's really tough. In fact, I tend to believe that male macho cultural stereotyping is so strong in our culture, combined with the academic reinforcement of the left side, that with most men, it's rather difficult to make it through school with much right brain left. They might make it through, but they were often punished in the process. They're usually more sensing, intuitive, artistic. And some of those qualities are not as easy to measure, see, as the left side, which is verbal, analytical, sequential, and so forth. See, leadership deals with holistic sensing, reading the future, sensing trends, providing direction, reading people's emotions. It's a very healthy thing to know this because all of us have both sides. And we can cultivate both sides. If we're more on the left side, do more artistic things. Listen more with the eyes. Touch for communication. Watch the holistic aspect. Read biography, autobiography. Get close to nature. Get close to concrete things, particularly feelings of people. If you're more on the right side, do more analytical work, sequential work, verbal work, so that you can kind of compensate for where you may be weaker. There are a lot of books on this subject about the operation of the brain, and that we're just beginning to get into that area, but to me it's very intriguing, the whole idea that we do have different capacities in our brain, and that you can so reinforce one side that you can utterly neglect the other. Abraham Maslow made a very, very astute statement, I think has great validity here. He said, "He that is good with the hammer tends to think everything is a nail." In other words, people that are good in one area of life, one expertise, one skill, would like all reality to be amenable to that skill, to that competency. They would like to almost force it if they had to. You do not see the world as it is, you see the world as we are. You see, until you can emotionally believe that all people see the world as they are, why would you want to value the differences? Because if I think I see it as it is, why do I want to mess around with someone who's off track? In other words, who is the objective person? Who's the truly objective person? It's the one who knows he's not. That he's subjectively involved, and he takes steps to compensate for that subjective involvement by involving other people. Who is the truly subjective person? The one who thinks he's objective. I see it as it is. The rest of you are buried by the minutiae. I see the larger picture. I'm objective. That's why they call me a supervisor. I have supervision. I see reality. I'm not biased and subjectively involved like you people. That's about the most scary attitude of all. It takes true humility and reverence to acknowledge that we're powerfully influenced by our conditioning. Now, that does not mean that there are not better opinions than other people, better maps of the world. The whole concept of the evolution of science, as we discussed earlier, is constantly evolving improved maps of the universe, improved paradigms. And it's a constant process that's going on. They gradually develop the ability to communicate and synergize, to where they can understand each other's points of view. Now, in labor management disputes, or in disputes between any two parties, it's the same basic principle that applies. If you can get both parties to listen to each other empathically and restate the other person's position to the other person's satisfaction before you make your own point, literally, it just drains the hostility and the anger out of the people involved. However, that is not an easy achievement when people are so ego-invested in their other points of view. I've been involved several times in negotiations between people who were angry at each other. And often they went to the law to hire lawyers to defend their positions. And all that did is exacerbate the problem. Because then you had to get into not genuine communication, but communication through a legal process. And often it deteriorated that process. Nevertheless, the trust level was so low, they felt like that's what they had to go. There was nowhere else they could go, nothing else they could do. We asked them if they would be interested in going for a win-win solution. Genuine win-win, where both parties really felt good about it. And usually, they would say yes, but they don't think it could happen. We'd say, if we can get the other party to say yes, and if we can begin the process of listening to each other and restating each other's position, would you be willing to do it? If you can only get one party of the two to do that, it usually will do the trick with the other party. We understand your position is, and your concerns are, and furthermore, you feel this, and you're concerned about this precedent. And people say, that's right. That's exactly it. You understand. Then they become amazingly open. You've given them psychological air. Then the same thing happens. Then they get into the synergistic process. So basically, my friends, habits 4, 5, and 6 teach a sequence in problem solving. Yeah, they really do. The sequence is to develop within yourself the attitude of trying to go for win-win. Then begin the process of seeking to understand before seeking to be understood. Then go into problem solving. I commend it to you. I commend to you the practice of it. And don't expect to be good at it for a while, any more than you could be good playing tennis or moving your grip to a new backhand grip in tennis or learning golf or any other skill. There will be an awkward period. Don't criticize the principal on the basis of some temporary awkwardness or some failings. Look on it as an extremely powerful skill that embodies the principal, which takes a lot of time and patience to really acquire and internalize. As a great man once put it, that which we persist in doing becomes easier. Not that the nature of the thing has changed, but our ability to do has increased. Synergy is the crowning achievement of all of the habits. Teamwork, team building, developing unity and harmony. Now remember how we're defining unity? Is it sameness? What is it? Complementariness. Build a complementary team. That's the essence of unity, not sameness. It's a far more mature definition.
This is the end of side 11.